morning, Your Honors. My name is David Maggie from the firm Anderson Dreher in Boston, and my colleague Deborah Christensen from the firm Givens Kersley in Boise, Idaho. We represent the plaintiff appellant Silverling and Sandpoint in this matter. We are here, Your Honors, because the district court made two fundamental errors in its decisions below. First, it made a fundamental error regarding the scope of preemption in federal aviation matters. In some local airport sponsors, like Bonner County here, choose the type of airport that they want. Specifically, they choose the design category of aircraft they wish their airport to serve. Then, given that choice, the FAA determines the safety standards that are applicable to that type of airport. Here, this court can only affirm the judgment below if it concludes that the FAA could somehow force the county to upgrade its airport to B2 design standards, even if the county decided that it didn't want to. And I will argue the FAA simply does not have that power. Secondly, Your Honors, the district court made a fundamental error when it prematurely declared the county the prevailing party in the litigation. It awarded the county nearly $750,000 in costs and fees, even though the case wasn't over. The trial had not yet occurred on count four, Silverling's claim for promissory estoppel, and as we now know, on the remand the state court, based on our supplemental submissions to the court, Silverling won more than $1 million in damages and costs and attorney's fees, and also defeated four counterclaims that the county had brought. So, I want to focus, if I might, on the specific facts issue here. The district court concluded, Your Honors, that the FAA had ordered the county to address three separate compliance issues in a way that was destructive of Silverling's development. First, the district court concluded that the FAA had ordered the county to address Silverling's rights, as well as the rights of other neighbors to Silverling to the west of the airport, their rights to access the runway at its midpoint, as opposed to access the runway at its ends. Second, the district court concluded that the FAA had supposedly ordered the county to address the fact that Silverling was proposing a residential development adjacent to the airport with access to the runway through the fence agreement. And then the third issue was that the district court concluded that the FAA had supposedly ordered the county to upgrade its airport to so-called B2 design standards. What the district court missed, Your Honors, is that two of these three issues of non-compliance were addressed to the FAA's satisfaction before the events in late 2011 triggered this lawsuit. Midfield access turned out to be the easiest issue. FAA was satisfied with the county's representations in January 2009 that it was going to work with Silverwing and it was going to work with Quest, which was one of Silverwing's neighbors to the west of the airport, to try to work with those entities to find alternatives to the midfield access or operation protocols that would address that problem. The residential through the fence component of Silverwing's project, which was an issue, no doubt about it, and we don't dispute that, was cured in March 2011 when the FAA, as the county acknowledges, completely shifted course on residential through the fence and allowed existing residential through the fence access to the nation's airports. That problem went away. The third issue, Your Honors, is the one that I'd really like to focus on today, and this is the supposed requirement imposed by the FAA that the county upgrade its airport to B2 design standards. In late 2011, again after the FAA had modified its rigid approach toward the residential to defense agreements, the county could have decided to abandon its plan to upgrade the airport to B2 design standards and leave the airport in a configuration that would have been consistent with Silverwing's development. That didn't happen. Instead, in December 2011, this is the event that triggered this lawsuit, the county chose to submit an amended corrective action plan to the FAA that reflected the county's determination to proceed with its upgrade to pharmacy grade, and then basically acquire the manufacturing patent says some or all of Solomon's development. And this public statement by Bonner County destroyed SolarWing's ability to market its units and cost SolarWing millions in damages. That was the action that triggered this lawsuit. And the district court erred when it concluded that that action, that amended correction plan, was ordered by the FAA. The county, what we say is the county had a choice about what type of airport it wanted to build. And it submitted an ALP back in 2003, as the court knows, which is largely the subject of the state court trial, that reflected an upgrade to B2 standards. Our position is, Your Honor, and we think federal law is clear, we think the FAA's approach to these issues are clear, is that the county, even though that development was shown on an approved ALP, the county had the ability to change its mind. They decided it didn't want to do it.
Let me go back to the theory of your case. It's what you allege in the complaint. Right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
In the complaint, in the federal complaint, you have a cause of action for breach, essentially for breach of contract.
That's correct.
Count one. Count one is for breach of the duty of good faith and fair dealing.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Which contract would we be talking about?
Where does that duty? Where does that duty?
The defense agreement and the taxiway easement.
Okay. And the other two claims were 1983 claims based on the takings theory.
Correct. Takings and equal protection.
Equal protection. And the fourth claim was the estoppel claim that the district court remanded back to the state court.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So we had the three claims. Why does the first claim involve safety and operations in this airport? I don't care what category of airport it is. Why isn't that in play here?
As I described at the beginning, the only issue that wasn't cured was this issue that the district court felt that the FAA had ordered the county to upgrade to B2 design standards. That was not the determination about, gee, the airport doesn't comply with the FAA ordered standards applicable to the type of airport. It was the decision that the county made about the kind of airport that it wanted. Now, we absolutely agree that once the county chooses the type of airport it wants to accommodate aircraft of the so-called B2 design category, then the FAA is all over that. There are a number of safety standards that get applied to that particular type of airport. But the decision about the kind of airport is the county's in the county.
What is it that the county did that violated its duty of good faith and fair dealing?
Submitting the amended corrective action plan in late 2011. Which expressed the commitment to.
So if you were to go to trial on this good faith and fair dealing claim, the theory, the factual presentation that you would make is that the county submitted this amended corrective action plan.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And it required, why was it in bad faith? Or why was it in good faith?
Well, it was completely inconsistent with the defense agreement that the county had signed that would have permitted this development to go forward.
And so your theory would be that they didn't have to do that amended corrective action.
Absolutely.
What they should have done is just maintain the status quo.
That is absolutely our theory. The county had a choice, in other words, whether it was to decide not to do the upgrade, the airport in its current configuration, SolarWing's development proceeds as planned, or persist in its determination to do the upgrade. And as a result, obviously, they have to take a series of actions that would destroy SolarWing's
development. So you talked about an amended corrective action. And there was an earlier corrective action.
That's correct, Your Honor. Back in late 2008.
Original corrective action plan was in response to concerns that the FAA had raised with respect to midfield access and logistics
and the residential through the fence access. That's correct. And then in 2009.
You don't complain about that.
No, Your Honor, because those are no longer issues. Those were no longer impediments to SolarWing moving forward because the FAA was satisfied with the approach to midfield access, and as a, you know, as a regulatory matter, the FAA changed its course on the residential
jet. So the heart of your first cause of action, your first claim for relief, factual predicate, is that they submitted, the county submitted this correct action plan in late 2011.
That's correct, Your Honor.
When they didn't have to.
That is correct.
When they did, they violated their duty of good faith and fair dealing, which resulted in damages.
Did the FAA require them to file a corrective plan?
The FAA did not require this. The record is very hard to decipher with respect to whether a corrective action plan at some point was required at that point. But there is no question, Your Honor, that the county did not have to take the particular actions in that corrective, amended corrective action plan that triggered our lawsuit. In other words, the upgrade to B2 design standards and then the acquisition of our property, that amended corrective action plan, I should point out, it basically says we are going to acquire and extinguish the solar wing development. And that was action that it did not have to take. And I should say here, as subsequent events developed, the county ultimately went to FAA way too late to save the damage to my client. Ultimately did go to FAA, as the court knows, based on the supplemental submissions we made. It decided that it no longer wanted to do the B2 upgrade. It hasn't. And, you know, the county has now represented repeatedly that the airport remains now in configuration as consistent with solar wing development. But in the meantime, the delay damages are extraordinary.
So the issue here is whether under the FAA regulations, as they existed in 2011, the county was obligated, in order to get permission from the FAA to build this airport, to submit the corrective plan.
And we submit, Your Honor, that with respect to the elements of the corrective action plan that damaged our county, the county did not have to do that. The county did not have to upgrade this airport to B2 design standards. It didn't have to remove the runway, and it didn't have to acquire our property. So let me speak briefly to counts 2 and 3, Your Honor, which are the civil rights claims. The district court dismissed counts 2 and 3 on state action grounds, effectively, and it seems
like what the state action grounds was there to have a customer policy. That's entirely distinct from state action. There's no dispute here that state actors were involved.
That is our view. On this long-standing customer policy that the county and the district court concluded that Silver Wing had to show, in our view, the Pembauer case just disposes of that. Supreme Court case from 1986 makes it clear you don't need, when you're talking about an act of the officially, you know, municipal policy-making body, like you are here, the amended corrective action plan was signed by every one of the county commissioners. When you're talking about that, it just takes one. It doesn't have to be a long-standing, frequent, repetitive course. That's basically the district court erred in concluding otherwise. The district court also concluded that, well, it's not really the acts of the county here in terms of the upgrade to the airport, because the FAA is on page 20 of the court's opinion, because really the FAA forced the county to do the upgrade.
Yeah, there was an FAA letter in the FAA regulations requiring changes to the airport.
This is the letter, Your Honor, referring back in March 2009.
Right.
Yes. I'm sorry. Yes, March 2009. There is a letter written by, I want to talk about that letter for a minute, because there was a letter written by an engineer in the Seattle Airport District Office that said, in effect, county, there was an approved ALP back here in 2003 that reflects the need to do this upgrade. And the plans you just submitted to us are inconsistent with that. And, Your Honor, as we submit, if you read that letter in isolation, it appears that the FAA is attempting to push this upgrade onto the county. But that letter can't be used by the county. Now, remember, 3 years later, the county submits the corrective action plan in March 2011. in our view, if the county had really thought that that letter from the engineer in Seattle 3 years previously was going to force the county to spend its scarce resources to upgrade an airport, even when it decided it didn't want to, we submit the county needed to check back with FAA. That's just simply not a reasonable interpretation of that 3 years.
Has there been any correspondence or regulations in the meantime from the time that that engineer wrote a 2009 letter and said this letter is no longer operative?
No, the record is void of any effort by the county to.
So why is there some theory that the passage of time changes the effect of the letter?
It's, Your Honor, it's a number of factors. It's the author of the letter, an engineer in the Seattle ADO. It's the passage of time, 3 years. And then, frankly, it's just absolutely inconsistent with A, the powers that FAA has under federal law.
I think you're missing some of the realities of the bureaucratic state, which is the county sees a letter from the FAA saying you should do these three things, and you're saying, well, you should disregard that, because in our analysis, that man wasn't really authorized to do it. It's been 3 years in between, and the county should just say, we're going to just dissolve the FAA. That's not the way that bureaucrats work.
No, I understand. We're not suggesting for a minute there is any effort to kiss off the FAA under any circumstances. As a lawyer for airports, you never kiss off the FAA. Our response is that that letter is reflecting a power on the FAA's part that the FAA itself doesn't even think it has. The FAA can't force the county to spend money at an airport as opposed to some local police.
You take all steps to take to get the county to say, listen, county, don't pay any attention to the FAA letter anymore. These are all the reasons that you shouldn't do so. And we want you to write a letter to that effect.
The record very clearly reflects, Your Honor, that at this point, the Silverwing, my friend, was very much boxed on conversations with the FAA relative to that. I'd like to deal in the time I have available to me on the attorney's fees issue. Again, the error that the district court made, really two of them with respect to fees. First of all, prematurely declared the county the prevailing party for the purposes of costs.
But in the federal court action, the county was the prevailing party.
Well, with the claims that remained in federal
court, there was nothing left in federal court. Once the court kicked back the fourth claim, there was nothing left in federal court.
Your Honor, all of the cases that the county cites on this, the San Diego case that it highlights in its brief, in all of those cases, all of the claims before the district court were dismissed. And that was the end of it. And then somewhere went back to state court.
It was no longer an estoppel claim in federal court. Over and done with. Out. But the claims that remain, the county prevailed.
Right. But count four, the fourth count of Silverwing's complaint in federal court, is remanded to state court. And then there was a lot of activity in state court. As Ms. Christensen knows, the county then filed four counterclaims and lost on all of them. Silverwing prevailed in front of the jury on the promissory estoppel claim. And this case is simply
is flowed in for the plaintiff.
That's correct, but it happened in state court on a claim that Silver, it was part of the original complaint.
Now, that claim originally started in state court.
That's exactly right. So, a number of the cases talk about how, well, you know, the defendant prevailed here, even though some of the claims were dismissed with an opportunity without prejudice. But at least the defendant has been freed of the burden of litigating in federal court. Here, that's not a consideration. Silverwing brought all four, brought the claims in state court to begin with. That's where it brought them. They got removed to federal court. The judge then exercised his discretion to send count four back to state court where Silverwing rang it up. Surely, if the judge had exercised his discretion to keep the claim, there would have been no ability to
reward it. In the state case, could you have proven the attorney's fees which they're seeking now in the federal case as an item of damage?
In the state case, could you?
But
it's an element of damage.
Right, why not?
No, I don't believe
so. If you're saying that commissary estoppel has caused all this damage. Among the damages that it's caused is losing the federal case and losing the attorney's fees in the federal case.
We did not make that claim, Your Honor.
You didn't make that claim?
We did not make that claim, Your Honor. Because we believe we had recourse with respect to the costs award in federal court by challenging it.
But it's suspended.
We think the costs award, one more issue, if I might, Your Honors, with respect to the attorney's fees award, is the district court's sua sponte award to the county of its fees for defending the two civil rights claims. The county argued below that it was entitled to recover its costs and fees for defending count one on the three defense agreement. The district court, on its own initiative, granted the county fees not only for that claim, but also for the two civil rights claims. When we came back in the second round of briefings, we never had a chance to address that issue. The district court raised it sua sponte. The district court then said, well, I'm going to treat this as a motion for reconsideration and hold you to the extraordinary circumstances test under Rule 60B, and your request for relief is denied. We never had a chance to address that issue before the court ruled on it. So what we are requesting here, Your Honors, is reversal of the district court's decision, but if the district court's decision is affirmed, a remand to the district court to wait to see how the state court litigation ultimately turns out as now appealed to the Idaho Supreme Court. And then if at the end of that, the district court in its discretion still determines somehow that the county is the prevailing party, at least an instruction that the award of fees on the through the fence agreement for the defense of the civil rights claims was plainly outside the scope of what Section 14G required.
Thank you, Mr. Officer, for your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Paul Friedenberg with the Buckalter Law Firm for Bonner County. And joining me at counsel's table is my colleague, Barbara Lichman. I can only respond to this new twist about the 2011 corrective action plan with Judge Bea's favorite Italian saying, se non è vero, e ben trovato, which means even if it's not true, it's a good story. And that's really what this is. There is nothing in the record, Your Honors. Nothing that shows an intervening event sometime before 2011. Where the FAA says, hey, call off the dogs. We don't need to implement these plans. But that didn't happen. And to answer Judge Bea's question, does the county still have an obligation? You know, does the passage of time relieve the county's obligation to comply with federal law? Of course not. This is the directive of the Federal Aviation Administration. The statement the council made was the county had a choice. That is particularly disingenuous in light of the facts of this case.
How does the B2 status of the county's desire to have a B2 airport? How does that fit in?
The county, that's a good question. The county didn't desire for a B2 airport. In fact, what we have in the record at page 257 is a letter, and it's from the FAA, and it says, we are concerned that Silverwing's development, specifically their newly constructed partial parallel taxiway, was constructed in accordance with your 2003 approved ALP. Was not constructed in accordance with your 2003 approved ALP. Rather, it was built based on your proposed plan to keep the runway at its existing location. That's the plan. That's the county's choice. The county chose to keep the runway where it was, not to go to B2. That was the county's choice. This is what they say. Although there was no objection to the partial parallel taxiway construction at the time, for the reasons stated in the letter and the need to bring the airport up to the required B2 design standard, as shown on your approved ALP, we, the FAA, cannot accept the proposed ALP change. That was the county's choice. The county had a choice. I mean, that's disingenuous. The county's choice was we don't want to move the runway. We want to accommodate Silverwing. They got this in response. That wasn't this plan, right? If we're talking about Monell, I mean, the moving force.
So, my next sentence, what you're saying is that the FAA understood the development to desire a B2 status airport?
No. design or critical aircraft standards for the airport aren't actually even, well, how can I put this eloquently? Neither the county nor the FAA wakes up one day and says, we choose this design or critical aircraft. Instead, it's done by objective standards. If you look at the supplemental excerpts of record, page 85, this is what it says. This is the advisory circular issued by the FAA 150/5300-13A. It says, design standards. For the purposes of this advisory circular, the selection of the design aircraft or group of aircraft characteristics used to design or update an airport facility is independent of, and then the first factor it says, is airport ownership. It's independent. We don't get to select what design standard. It actually is based on the current most demanding use of the airport. So if you've got Gulfstreams flying in, and they have, you know, a certain wingspan and approach speed, but then overnight, all of a sudden, you've got 737s flying. You know, there's a change in the use of the airport. Then what they do is they look at what is the current critical, the most demanding. Now it's the most demanding 737. And they say, how do we need to change the airport if necessary to accommodate that demand? That is a pure safety determination. I can say it's 100%.
What you're saying is the county didn't want to do that.
No, the county didn't want to do that. That's undisputed in the record. That's page 257 of the record. They're saying, we reject, and page 174 of the record, you'll notice, is another airport layout plan. That's the 2006 airport layout plan. What you'll notice about that is, as non-aeronautical engineers, it's difficult to notice anything when looking at one of these airport layout plans, as I'm sure you may have discovered. But one thing you can notice when you look at that one, that's the 2006 airport layout plan that was submitted by the county to the Federal Aviation Administration. The one thing you notice about that is that you'll see two boxes sort of in the middle of the document. One of those boxes, the one on the bottom, the larger one, is where the FAA is supposed to sign. They have the final approval power. That box is empty. That box is empty on that document because they refused to sign it, and they sent this letter and said you're going to have to submit an airport layout plan that shows upgrading to P2 Design Center based on these objective criteria. That's what the county was dealing with in this case, and the idea that it was the county has a choice. I mean, it is. It's disingenuous. That's not the facts of this case. The portion of the record that completely rebuts counsel's argument is from ER 0250 to ER 0267. That's the 17-page portion of the record that just completely explains the driving factor in everything that happened here was the county's between rock and hard place. We're trying to do right by Silverwing, do right by everybody on the airport.
So what do you understand their breach of contract, breach of implied duty, good faith and fair dealing to be all about?
I understand it to be about access to the airport because they're looking at two things. They're saying that it's the implied covenant in their through the fence agreement and the implied covenant in their easement, which provides access. Now, that was a specific, I mean, if you go to that part of the record that I just mentioned, that's one of the primary problems that the Federal Aviation Administration had with Silverwing development is they didn't like residential access, and it actually took an act of Congress in 2012 to grandfather in residential access, including in this case, they were grandfathered in as Section 136 of the FAA Modernization Reform Act of 2012. So to say that's a local decision, right? It took an act of Congress to grandfather their access in. The county didn't unilaterally, there's nothing in the record showing the county unilaterally said, we don't think there should be access for residential anymore. This all came from the federal government saying there's a safety problem on your airport. And the second they say that, if you are a federally obligated airport, the second the FAA says safety, you listen. You don't say, well, they said that in 2009 and now it's 2011, so, we can submit a different plan. But I will tell you this. The record is also clear that the county never stopped pursuing its choice. Just wished to keep the runway where it is. What it wanted to do, it never stopped pursuing that. So it jumped through the hoops and it submitted a corrective action plan. FAA said, your corrective action plan's not good enough. Submit a corrective action plan with X, Y, and Z. The county responded, okay, here's another new one with X, Y, and Z. But during this whole time, the county continued to try to get the FAA to come around to a position of understanding, we don't want to move this runway. That
only
eventually
happened. It eventually happened in 2015. And now, Silverwing's development is undisturbed. You know, this business about tearing up their taxiway, that never happened. Their taxiway's right where it was. The runway's right where it was. You know, there has to be that.
My impression reading from the material was that the county wanted this development.
No. And that's the choice that they've put on it. In this case, it's absolutely not correct. The county did not want an upgrade to a B2 design.
The FAA did not know the plan you did build.
Oh, Silverwing development. No question about it. No question about it. I think the Silverwing's development for the county represented something that was an interesting sort of pro-aviation idea. And this is a small, I've been to this airport a number of times. I've walked in the taxiways. This is a small airport. There's not much going on out there. You know, there's a train that blows through about every 20 minutes and wakes everybody up, so maybe not the best spot for a residential development. But now that the county was on board with this from the start, it still is. You know, I mean, to the extent that the federal government will allow it, which now the ducks in a row have been knocked down and the federal government is saying this is okay, right, that we got our FAA Modernization Reform Act of 2012 gotten through the fence access, that's no longer a problem. We got our approved ALP in 2015. It's no longer a problem. Runway's not moving as of the current plan. So, again, the idea that the county could choose the kind of airport it wanted, well, the county did choose, and the FAA rejected that in that letter that I just read. And that's what gets to the, you know, county.
ER on the letter, please.
Yes, that is ER0257. Council's response with respect to the Section 1983 claims. It goes to Pembauer. Pembauer is the best possible case for the county, for the county's position, because, I think my only regret is, I didn't cite it before council did. Pembauer says, quote, "We hold that municipal liability under Section 1983 attaches where and only where a deliberate choice to follow a course of action is made from among various alternatives by the official or officials responsible for establishing final policy with respect to the subject matter in question." That is a direct quote from Pembauer. The letter that I read to you. Although there was no objection to the partial parallel taxiway at the time for the reasons stated in the letter and the need to bring the airport up to the required B2 design standard as shown on your approved ALP, we cannot accept the proposed ALP change. The county can't have a policy sufficient to satisfy the Monell standard on this issue, on every other, I mean, almost every other possible issue that the Board of County Commissioners could vote on. They satisfy that. They would satisfy that Pembauer, right? Any of these local issues, a local ordinance, that they are the final governmental authority with respect to the subject matter at issue. But when it comes to these questions at issue in this case, it's not disputable. They're not the final governmental authority. And not on the law, but also not on the facts of the case. With respect to the preemption claim and the good faith of fair dealing, covenants of good faith and fair dealing, the Ninth Circuit is sort of the leading jurisdiction when it comes to other courts looking in at how these safety issues have been interpreted in the terms of preemption. The judge found that it implicated the complete and exclusive sovereignty of the Federal Aviation Administration through implied field preemption. And that's absolutely right as a matter of this circuit's law, but I would go even higher, right? I believe in the words of the Constitution, and it's the Supremacy Clause that says the federal law is the supreme law of the land. We have the Act of Congress, 49 U.S.C., Section 40, 40103, A and B, says the Federal Aviation Administration shall have complete and exclusive sovereignty over the navigable airspace and the safety in the air and of people and property on the ground. It's a completely preempted field if, as the FAA concluded, this is a safety issue. So access, and to give you some insight, Your Honor, some insight into what the FAA's problem is, or was, with residential to the fence, is that unlike commercial to the fence, where you'd assume
probably a fairly regulated and sophisticated group that can go through the fence. The FAA was concerned at the time about, you know, what if you're coming in to land the plane and there's a kid walking his dog on the runway. That's the legitimate concern that raised these residential through the fence concerns. Now, they collected a lot of comments in the rulemaking process, and they determined that in some situations, they should grandfather it in because it's an existing right that's been granted. The other thing that Kembauer case says, and it's admittedly in a footnote, but it's explaining the holding in Oklahoma City versus Tuttle. It's in footnote 5 of that opinion. What it says is that after a municipal policy or custom has been established, that it only takes one unconstitutional act in furtherance of that policy to allow for municipal liability under 42 U.S.C. section 1983, but it still takes one. So we still don't have an answer from counsel and from appellant regarding, we have a policy or custom from the federal government. We're doing what the federal government is telling us to do. That's clearly the moving force. I mean, that's the language Monell uses. What is the moving force? That is clear in the record. And so even if we say, well, yeah, sure, but it doesn't have to be longstanding, Kembauer doesn't support their case. There's been no pointing to an action in furtherance of some local desire or policy or custom. On the prevailing parties issue, I filed a motion to finalize a judgment under Rule 58D, Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. I had one on three claims. I had one claim remanded, not based on the lack of subject matter jurisdiction, as the briefs from appellants suggest, but based on the district court deciding in its discretion that it didn't want to exercise supplemental jurisdiction over the state law issue. I filed a motion under Rule 58. They filed a notice of non-opposition. That's my motion to supplement to show that. What the judge then did is what both parties asked the judge to do, which was issue a final judgment on the three claims on which the county prevailed. I had 14 days under Rule 54. I had 14 days to submit for prevailing party costs and fees. That triggered. They filed a notice of non-opposition to the very item that gave me a 14-day limit. To submit for costs and fees. There's been no suggestion by counsel as to some alternative way that a district court judge, I don't know if counsel's proposing that Judge Law should have waited 2 years and watched the promissory estoppel claim from afar and determined what the state court did with it before determining. I don't know. I don't see a procedurally tenable way for a district court judge to do anything other than precisely what the judge did in this case. The county was entitled to its costs under Rule 54 by prevailing on all three of the claims in that judgment. And finally, with respect to the defense agreement and the fees, the attorney's fees issue, the contractual attorney's fees clause in this case was as broad as can be. The words are, quote, any action brought, right, to enforce or interpret the terms of this contract. Well, if we look at the First Amendment complaint, the charging allegations of those Section 1983 actions, of those Section 1983 claims, are very clearly directed at the access issue, and that's been Silverman's complaint since the beginning. So, is this any action brought to enforce or interpret the terms of that agreement? Of course it is. This is an action that they brought for that purpose.
What's the solution to enforce the agreement is to vindicate a violation of the county's constitutional rights?
It's okay to
not the county, but of Silverwing's constitutional rights.
It's good question, but I think we have to look at what constitutional rights we're talking about. How did they get access to
their equal protection? One of their claims was whatever. I don't quite understand the theory, but they had a theory about their right to equal protection.
That's true.
Was violated by what the county did, and they had a theory of takings. Question whether or not they could have it to its claim in this instance, but that was their two constitutional and the 14th Amendment.
That's correct, Your Honor, and I'll answer both of
those. Yes, you do the contract. What does it have to do with the contract?
I'll answer both of those separately, if I may. First, with respect to equal protection, what they did was they said, if you look at the others with midfield access on the airport, the others, the keyword access, then those others haven't been treated the way we've been treated, right? So we're a class of one, we're being treated differently. That's not as their equal protection claim, but only, right, the predicate for that is that you have a right to access. And that's the racially covenant of the defense agreement. That's what they're saying. On the inverse discrimination claim, what they were saying is they're not claiming that we are, they're claiming that by removing access to the property, right, if they no longer have it, and this is in the charging allegations, they mention the access, the value of their property, right, it essentially becomes not what they intended it to be. How can we have an airport that's a fly-in, fly-out community if you can't fly-in, fly-out, and taxi over to your residence, park it under your residence, which is what you're proposing? So, at the very heart of both of those claims is the access issue, and they don't have a right to access without that sort of defense agreement. So is it brought to enforce or interpret the terms of that agreement? It is. It's brought to enforce the right that was granted.
But this Section 1883 claim is intended to vindicate the deprivation of constitutional rights.
True enough, Governor. Absolutely. But this particular action was brought to vindicate a right that they didn't have without that agreement. So it's to vindicate something that's access, right? Not any member of the public has access.
The only claim was the contractual claim that we have in 1983 case.
If their only claim was a contractual claim, they wouldn't have. Oh, well, the way that they chose that is choosing 19. They chose Section 1983 as a vehicle for enforcing that access right, and specifically, Your Honor, for the value of their property. There's no inverse condemnation because the value of our property has been taken from us without access. So, you're now selecting Section 1983 as the vehicle for recovering what you claim you've lost as a result of losing that access right. That access right is a right that was granted in the free defense agreement.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yes.
There is no ambiguity about FAA's use of its own power to compel an upgrade in design standards. I just want to refer the court to page 26 of our brief, where we cite FAA Order 5196B, as well as an advisory circulator, and it says, this is the FAA order, the sponsor, through preparation of an FAA-approved ALP, may determine the level of design standards for new construction, that is, the aircraft design category of the airport. The ALP is the airport owner's plan for development of the airport, and although we, the FAA, have a significant interest in it, the FAA does not own the airport and should not attempt to dictate what development is shown on the airport. But it's not just FAA, it's Village of Bensonville, which we cited through our briefs, and it's also, we submit, just fundamental principles of federalism. The FAA cannot compel the county to upgrade an airport if it doesn't want to. With respect to the attorney's fees issue, all right, I just want to say it's not only a substantive flaw. If the Through the Fence agreement had said you can get fees in any action relating in any way to, then maybe a point. But this one is quite narrow. It's an action to enforce or interpret, and that's just count one. Also, we never had an opportunity to argue this, which I think is a fundamental procedural flaw that in and of itself warrants a remand on the fees issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Safe travels.
Thank you for your arguments in this case.